You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me on this Halloween morning via Skype is my friend Mike Alipov. And Mike, what are you going trick-or-treating as later on today?
I'm going to go as Barry Trotz, actually, which is to say I'm going to be wearing a wizard's hat and I'm going to wear a neck brace to hide my neck and just walk around and turning this season around.
Yeah.
Turning people's days around with my wizardry.
That's fair to say. There has been some wizardry going on in the last week or so. We sat here about a week ago and said that, all right, well, they got these four games coming up, and if they can get 6 points out of them, that would be an enormous, enormous victory. And they came away with 7 points, even with an overtime loss that we'll talk about in a minute. I mean, this has to be just an incredibly positive week if you're an Islanders fan, right? I mean, yeah, we're going to nitpick a bunch of stuff over the next little while, but I mean, there's no way you saw these four games and were like, yeah, I think they can win three of those and you know, get maybe an overtime loss. They'll be okay. They went into some tough buildings and won three really tough games in three really different ways. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's about as positive an Islander morning as I can remember. I mean, the last night was the Penguins game, and just that was. I've watched that Islander versus Penguin game, I don't know, 600 times in my life, and that's the first time the Islanders won it.
Yeah, I missed the first period, which is apparently when all the stuff happened, and then because I thought, you know, for the second and third periods, I thought they played really well, but I kept hearing about how they sucked. I was like, wait, but I guess all of that must have happened in the first period.
Yeah, the first period was bananas.
Yeah.
Just absolute bananas. And it was funny. Like, there's just some – it's funny because on Twitter, like, before games, you'll hear when the Islanders play somebody who used to be an Islander or someone who's making their NHL debut, like, the rounds go about, oh, he's going to score his first NHL goal or he's going to score against the Islanders. And it's like the predetermined outcome. The only thing that I knew was going to happen in that first period was that Crosby was going to score. He just had that look about him, and he did. But everything else just went so off script. It was amazing.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, ultimately the conclusion we'll come to is that, yeah, I mean, they're winning games that I think typically over the course of the last 10 years, let's just make it a nice round number, they probably would have lost. And certainly last night, I mean, going into Pittsburgh, you know, I thought obviously that the Penguins honored the victims of the tragedy at the Tree of Life Synagogue and did a good job with that. And, you know, I hate to sound cynical about it, but I mean, it was a somber moment for the entire city and, you know, not only taking the talent discrepancy into account, but also the moment and the situation. I didn't think the Islanders had a chance in winning that game at all. And to have hung in there over the, you know, a pretty wild first period and then to, you know, put their foot on the gas and come from, you know, a tied moment and take the game is pretty remarkable. And that's the kind of difference that Trotz has made. But let's go back a week ago today. The Islanders had a four-game stretch. And they started with the Florida Panthers, who the night before had kind of gotten their butts kicked by the Rangers. And, you know, no offense to the Panthers, but if you're looking at a stretch of games against the Panthers, Flyers, Hurricanes, and Penguins, that Panthers game is kind of the easiest one. It's kind of the only gimme in there that, you know, a game that you would expect the Islanders to win. And they played like poop and were somehow staked to a 2-0 lead that they promptly blew and lost in overtime. And, of course, you know, that is the kind of Islanders game that we would have seen. We've seen many times over the last few years, and it just felt like, oh, here we go. This is the team again. It's hard to remember all the way back there. But, yeah, they didn't play well at all despite that lead. And then Mike Hoffman scored in overtime. And that's the exact kind of game you're talking about. We're like, yeah, I've seen this before. I know what happens. And the predictable ending is predictable. Like,
yeah, it's funny how that it's set up like that. Like you had that game, which was very pre-Trotz Islanders, and he's like, "All right, you see what just happened tonight? It's never going to happen again. And if it does, you guys are all in big, big trouble because, you know, from that point on, the Islanders like when it's not like they shelled up when they played a league, but they're very opportunistic. Right? Especially, you know, last night it might just be because it's on my mind. I mean, the Flyers game too, when the Islanders. Sure, like they were getting outshot and outchanced, and the other teams were pushing play. But when the Islanders had a chance to break out, it was a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2. Last night was just all on man rushes. Like yeah. The Islanders, they got shelled. But the more and more I thought about it, it's like every and we kind of made fun. People kind of make fun of Trotz for the quality, not quantity stuff, especially last year with the Capitals, because people thought maybe he was just hiding the fact that the Capitals just got outshot every game. But It starts to like make sense when you think about that game last night. Like Valtteri Filppula and Andrew Ladd must have had 600 2-on-1s between them last night against yeah. the Penguins.
Yeah, no,
every time I looked up, it was wild.
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. They you know they did get shelled and they got outside of the game against the Flyers. They got I think outshot in every one. They may have been outshot against the Flyers too. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but at the same time, like you. Especially in last night's game, I was hard pressed to say they were playing really poorly. And what they've gotten good at is forcing turnovers and turning them into odd man rushes. Like you said, I'm thinking about Anthony Beauvillier's goal in against the Flyers, which you know got a huge monkey off of his back. But you know, I forgot who stole the puck. It might have been Eberle, or I think it might have been a defenseman, and then who fed it to Barzal. And as Barzal is like drawing a couple of guys towards him. There's Beauvillier breaking towards the net, and he's all by himself. And, of course, Barzal hits him with the pass. And, I mean, it was a beautiful, beautiful goal. but it's the kind of goal that, you know, happens when – and this is old-school thinking, but when you hustle and when you can see what's going on and you know where to be to make that play happen. And, you know, that's, I think, the way they want to play. They want to be opportunistic. They want to force turnovers. But they don't want to just take a ton of shots and – you know, we'll talk a little bit about this more later when we conclude. You know, we look at the conclusion, but that's just Trotz hockey. Like, I just don't think that Trotz is gonna. He doesn't want them shooting from everywhere. He says he'd rather have one well placed shot than like 10 shots from all over the place. Which you know, in this day and age, especially in social media, is not the way that you can play. How successful can the Islanders be with that? I don't know. They're sure as hell way more successful this first month of the season than I think anybody thought they would be. So it works right. To a certain degree for sure. You know, I'm not about to label them Stanley Cup contenders or anything, but
I think I might.
go right ahead if you want. Hey, go for it. You know, but you know, I think it's a way to play, and the thing is going to be to get them to play consistently like this. And I'm looking at you, Brock Nelson, because it's October 31st. Brocktober ends tomorrow. We all know what that means. He's going to go into his cocoon until like January and not score again. But he's got 6 goals in the first month of the season. And if he gets 5 or 6 in the next month of the season, and then 5 or 6 in the next month, you know, you're looking at a guy who goes from being a consistent 20-goal scorer with, you know, 40 games of inactivity to a guy who can, you know, perhaps reach 40 goals. Like, that's crazy. Who's in a walk year, of course, so right. He's going to make a touchdown.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what Trotz does is he walks behind him before every one of his shifts, and he just whispers in his ear, "You're in a walk year."
but he's been great. He especially was great against the Flyers, and he was really, really good against the Penguins. So, but let's talk about that Flyers game because I found the whole thing hilarious. I had a great time watching it. I really did.
I was laughing. It wasn't funny until I guess like the third period when Barzal, Eberle and Beauvillier made that play, which each one of them was like it was like subtly beautiful from the three of them. Barzal with that little chip to himself, caught it, put it down. No looked to Eberle, who then no looked to Beauvillier, who then scored. And of course, it was the reunited game for them. You know,
I know it took a while for Trotz to put together a line that we all saw work beautifully last year. But I give him a pass on that. I think it's fair to allow a new coach, especially who doesn't really know the players that well, a time to experiment. And I, you know, respect him trying to make things work, but at the end of the day, kind of going with what already works. So, you know, why fight it? But I think it's okay if he was going to experiment. So I'm just glad he figured it out, you know, within a couple of weeks before, you know, it's like December and we're still yelling about it. But that game was great. I spent a little part of my Friday night talking to Kelly over at Broad Street Hockey for their podcast. That site is great, and they have like 100 podcasts, and they're all really good. And the Flyers, especially when they're having like a bad season, they're easily the most entertaining fan base out there are Flyers fans. Even when they're winning, they're entertaining. But when they're losing, nobody brings it like Flyers fans. And her and I were like, I don't know how anybody is going to win this game, because both we were both very, very down on our teams. And I'm proud to say, when she asked me who the under the radar player that, you know, Flyers fans should look out for, I said, well, you know, Andrews Lee is the captain, and I don't think anybody realizes outside of Islanders fans that he scored 40 goals last year. He had, what, he had a goal and two assists, or goal and three assists in that game? And I said, Anthony Beauvillier has no goals, and he can easily score a hat trick. I can see that happening, too. And he had a goal, and I think an assist, too. So, you know, all of my predictions mostly came true, which doesn't happen that well, that often. But that was a good, and they played really, really, really well in that game. I mean, from top to bottom, that might have been, that and the Sharks game might have been their two best games of the season. And the added bonus of like sending Flyers fans scrambling to kind of comprehend getting blown out of their own building by this team that everybody picked to be dead last in the league was just extra cherry on top. And they, you know, Michael Neuwirth was coming back. People were like, oh yeah, he's going to be pretty good because he's coming back from injury, and now is the time for him to be good. No, they kind of victimized him in that game and victimized the Flyers defense. And that was one of the more fun games I've seen the Islanders play in a really long time.
Yeah, and it was funny too, because going into that game, the Flyers were really struggling. Yeah. And like you said, like Neuwirth was coming back, which weirdly was like a, oh my God, the season's turning around, Michael Neuwirth's back moment, which I was like, all right, you guys are really grasping for straws here. Like,
they're carrying three goalies now too, I think. They might have three on the active roster because they just nobody can make a save. It's crazy.
Yeah, and honestly, like that was another game that if this was a, you know, different kind of coaching staff, the Islanders might lose, because it turns into a, hey, the Islanders are coming to our town. This is a chance for us to build something, get a win. We're struggling right now. This team obviously isn't very good. They don't defend well. And it turned into the Islanders pouring on to the Flyers' misery, which like that, I feel like that rarely happens when the Islanders do that. You know, they're usually the team that turns team seasons around. And instead, they just went in, took care of business, went out, and played. Yeah, that was a really just impressive game. From a team that I was fully expecting them to lose after the Panthers game, because it's like, oh, you know what, maybe it's going to take a little bit more time for for the Islanders to be good because of the Panthers game, and it didn't go that way. I was thrilled.
All three of these games, or I should say every game but the Panthers game, the Islanders had every single reason to lose. Like it was a matinee on the road, and which I told Kelly again, like, there's no way the Islanders are going to win that game because it's a matinee on the road against a struggling team. They got called out by their coach, like Dave Haxtell told them to sack up or something like that. Like they had to, you know, pick their shit up or whatever Jack Capuano said, you know, something like that. I'm like, they're going to lose, but they won. The next night or the next day, they played in Raleigh, and again against a team that shelled them with shots the first night. You know, 14 hours after they played their another game on the road, there's no way they're going to win this game. And I didn't watch it. I was actually in the city with my wife. We went to see Golden Girls Live, which is it was the Lost Halloween episode. These guys put together a show where they act out the Golden Girls, a quote-unquote lost Halloween episode that was never made. It was really good. You should check it out. I took pictures with them afterwards. It was cool. So I missed the entire game, but it sounded like a lot like the first game where they got shellacked, and Thomas Greiss was just – he is just locked in, man. When he sees that red uniform, he is no joke. Like, he's out there. And they won. They won, what was it, 2-1, right? Or something like that? Was it 3-2?
Yeah, it's 2-1.
Yeah.
And Ryan Pollock scored, which is nice. Yeah. And yeah, they, it was once like that first period was once again, it was like, yeah, I think it was the Islanders that took the lead in the first. Yeah, they took the lead in the first. And it was, yeah, it was just sitting there like, okay, this is nice to have the lead, but we're probably not going to. But that's when it kind of hit me, like, the Islanders are going to be really hard to beat. And not in a – they're just going to sit back in their own zone and just absorb pressure and try to block as many shots as possible like some other coaches have with that defensive reputation. No, they're going – what they do is they kind of like – I don't remember if you remember Scrubs, but they say like when they boing flip, they absorb pressure and then they turn it around very quickly and they're right. Going the other way. Yeah. So they have a game plan to counterattack, which it's cool to watch. It's something different. It's something I never really paid attention to with Trotz because, you know, like when he was in Nashville, obviously, and then a little bit more with the Capitals, but it just always looked that like, all right, the Capitals are just giving up a ton of shots and they're winning because they have really good players. But you start to like kind of notice the nuances to the game plan. Like they make every inch of ice hard to earn on the other team. Like this isn't them just sitting at their own blue line. They're, like the Barzal play against the Flyers, the pressure starts right as the puck hits the other team's stick. And then all of a sudden, goal number one is get the puck. Goal number two is pass the puck. Goal number three is to score. So it's cool to watch, and I'm really excited because I think honestly, like my expectations aren't. I was being facetious when I said they're a Stanley Cup contender, but they're definitely raised a little bit, and I think that this team could kind of just hang around because of the way that they play and the game plan that they're deploying will earn them points against teams that they really haven't had no business earning points against at this time last year.
Yeah. I mean,
the Hurricanes, they've taken 4 points from the Hurricanes.
I know. Yeah. And you know, we haven't even mentioned it too. Like this schedule to open a season has been really tough. I mean, they had eight out of 13 games on the road. No, sorry. I think 11 out of 13 games have been on the road. Like they've barely played at home. They played some really tough competition that, you know, aside from the Hurricanes, you could look at before the season and be like, man, that's a tough schedule. They're playing San Jose. They're playing Nashville, Philly, Penguin, you know, Pittsburgh. That's tough. And they've managed, like you said, to make points and hang around. And as far as Trotz, like it is funny because I remember when Nashville, you know, first came into the league and he had this reputation as being a defensive guy. Like, oh, well, you know, they're not going to be very good, so they hired a guy who knows how to teach defense. And then when he went to the Caps, it was like, well, I mean, scoring for them is easy. Now they're going to learn how to play defense. But you realize that that's part of it for sure. I mean, they're definitely more calm, more structured in the defensive zone. But, yeah, a lot of it has to do with how much they can pressure and how they force the turnovers. It's a lot of fun. And you know, I don't think – again, I'm not expecting Andrew Ladd, Val Filppula – and Leo Komarov to like get a goal a game. Like I just don't, you know, eventually that part will dry up, but you know, so far, like they're doing what they need to do. They force turnovers and then Filppula and Ladd can kind of go the other way. And each of them has enough offensive skill. I mean, you said it yourself, like Ladd brings a certain amount of offense to that line that they wouldn't have with somebody else. And they can do stuff. They can cycle. They can make things happen. And again, it's all about those turnovers. And it's a lot of fun to see. I don't know how long it'll last, but you know, the Rangers played like that for a long time too, and went to, you know, Eastern Conference Finals and a Stanley Cup Final. So I'm not saying the Islanders are going to do that, but that was how they used to play a lot too. I mean, they used to get shelled a couple of games, but you know, somebody would chip the puck out to Zuccarello, and him and you know Ryan Callahan would score on a 2-on-1. Like that's right. They did that for years, and it worked.
It's actually funny because I never really thought about that, but it's 100% right. The Rangers were always mocked for the way that they played. Like, all right, we're Henrik Lundqvist will bail him out.
Yeah, exactly. Girardi sucks. You know, yeah.
Off a shin pad and in. Yeah. Like that was how the Rangers won you know, 80 points one season off, you know, two goals with inside 2 minutes left off a shin pad and in, and Lundqvist with like a 48 save performance. I mean, it could work. There's no one way to play hockey. And I think that is kind of got lost on a lot of people, including myself at times, like, especially with the way that we treat the advanced stats, which they add, like they add to the picture, but that don't, out shooting a team 65-45 or out attempting or out of coursing them doesn't translate to wins all the time. Like the Hurricanes have been doing it for years and they just never, if the Hurricanes had Barry Trotz, they'd probably have been a dynasty right now. Yeah. But it's just like there's different ways to win. And the Trotz too, like Ken hit people buried Ken Hitchcock last year for what he did with the Stars, where he turned him into kind of a defensive minded team with all this offensive talent, and it didn't work good. And I don't think Ken Hitchcock really took the modern game and blended it with what his game plan was, where Trotz isn't really stubborn, and he has adapted but also isn't giving up like his ship. Like he's taken his game plan, which works, and adapted it to the modern game, which is all speed and obviously trying to generate as much offense as possible and keep the puck as much as you can. So there's definitely something going on. I can't really, like you said, I'm not trying to get too up yet, but there's something going on that has at least piqued my interest and kept me much more engaged with the season and these games than I thought I would be the year.
I mean, again, you know, to reiterate what we said when we started this season, we weren't even sure we were going to be here talking about this team, you know, like, and here we are after three straight wins against some really tough opponents, talking about how much things have changed and how different it is watching them play this year as opposed to previous years. And, you know, I think Trotz deserves a lot of credit. I mean, it's going to sound kind of silly, but, you know, I think he's the first person to recognize, like, yeah, I don't have Alex Ovechkin and Nick Backstrom on this team. Like, he knows, I think he said it himself. He is evaluating and getting to know these players a lot more. He talked yesterday with Shannon Hogan about getting on the road trip and kind of bonding and learning about each other and getting the players to hold themselves accountable. And I know that's the most overused phrase. I think accountability has surpassed class as the classy as the most overused phrase in hockey, if not sports. It's the worst. Every coach says it. Nobody knows. It doesn't really mean anything. But when Trotz says it, I think what he's talking about is, you know, players getting on, demanding more of themselves, like the players in the room demanding that this guy does this thing and this guy does that thing, and playing for each other, not so much playing for the coach. And I think his game plan has, you know, kind of help that along. And I think they've come to an agreement about who needs to do what and how they need to play. And every game you could see them getting a little bit more, a little bit tighter, a little bit doing the things that they're supposed to be doing a lot smoother than they were. Hopefully that continues. Again, there are going to be games they're going to lose. There are going to be games where they're just out of sorts. That's going to happen. Again, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, these guys are going to make the playoffs. But, I mean, if they can hang around, and I mean, they could finish, you know, another month. All right, so now they're over two games over 500 for this month. If they can, you know, shoot for over 500 in the next month too, you know, now we're talking about putting something together. And I think the players kind of appreciate it. And somebody mentioned it in the comments. I'm sorry, I don't remember who. For I think it was last night's game against the Penguins, which we'll talk about in a second. But it really does feel like there's a structure now, another overused word, but it feels like there's a game plan now under Trotz, whereas under Doug Weight and Jack Capuano, it was kind of the players more freestyling than anything else. And like, I'm not saying they didn't do anything. I'm sure they did some coaching, probably mostly on the defensive end of things, but it just seems like there's a game plan for how to get the puck and how to score now, and that everybody's buying into that wasn't there before. And it's been exciting and it's been fun to see. And, you know, again, you go into three buildings that you didn't expect to get wins in and come out with three wins. I mean, that's crazy. Now we got to see what happens Thursday night in Brooklyn against the Penguins. But yeah, last night against the Penguins, I mean, I certainly wasn't thinking they were going to win, but they got shelled in the first period again, but it was 2-2. They went up 2-0. They gave up two goals to tie it. You thought, yeah, well, again, like you said before, I've seen this movie. We know what's going to happen. But the third period was all Islanders. They outshot the Penguins. They played really smart, really well. And I don't know, when Matt Martin scores, I feel like the Islanders are going to win the game. Like, it's just, it's a weird thing. Happened against the Flyers. And when he scores, things are going to happen. And, you know, that I think it just pisses people off when they see Kamara and score against their team. So I like it. But, yeah, they ended up finishing that period up 5-2, and they ended up winning it 6-3. I mean, you know, so that was
a game. And it's funny. I think the first period really skewed in that Penguins game how – because they were outplayed out in the first period. They were running around a little bit, and they were very lucky to be up or to be tied, but to have a two-goal lead at some point. And the second and third period, like especially the second half of the game, like once we got to that, once Brandon Burke said the Islanders have been outshot 22-7, and then immediately the Islanders scored. As he finished that sentence, I think Phil Pelleau was the one who scored that goal. And from that point on, the Islanders were the better team. Like, and whether it was the Penguins just being like, oh, just in their own heads, like it's one of those nights. Like, I can't believe we're in this game. But like the when Malkin scored that goal to start the third period, the Islanders once again, like they just kicked into gear and the game plan came out. I was shocked how well organized the team, like they weren't running around at all in the third period. What is going on? Like, this is not who I expected them to be.
No, for sure. They had to kill a penalty, I think, in that period too. At one point, oh yeah, they were killing a penalty, and then the Penguins pulled the goalie, so they were up 6-4, and there was no scrambling. They just cleared the puck. I mean, they got a couple of lucky bounces. I think the Penguins had a little bit too much mustard on their passes a couple of times, but you know that comes from pressure, I think, and that comes from forcing the puck carrier and making those things happen, and the Islanders just killed it, and that was it. And Jordan Eberle didn't get a hat trick into the empty net, but I mean it was impressive after that first period. It turned into a pretty impressive performance, and you know, at that point I thought it was okay. I mean, Malkin scored about a minute or so into the period and made it 5-3, and you thought, oh boy, here we go. But you know, once you got past the 10-minute mark and things were pretty, at that point, pretty much still in control, it worked out pretty well. However, the black cloud, and the reason that I'm afraid that this is going to be obsolete by the time we post it this morning, was that Robin Leonard left with an apparent injury. They showed it on TV, him kind of stretching his back out a little bit. He went into the locker room after the second period, and Thomas Greiss emerged as their starting goalie, as the goalie in the third, and Leonard wasn't even on the bench. So hopefully it was just a precautionary thing. They were up 3 goals at the time. Maybe Trotz is just supremely confident in his team executing his game plan, which, you know, would be good because they do have a game against the same Penguins on Thursday in Brooklyn. But if Leonard is hurt or he's out for an extended period of time, that's going to be a problem because there's no way they are where they are right now without him. He's been absolutely outstanding. And Greiss has played well, too, in fairness, but way better than he did last year. But man, Leonard, I mean, you talk about surprises. Barry Trotz is a surprise that he's gotten this much out of this team so far. But man, Robin Leonard has just been awesome. Like, he's just been awesome.
he's giving them everything that they didn't really get last year, where it's making every save he's supposed to and then some. And yeah, that would really suck. Greiss definitely has been good, especially those two games against the Hurricanes, basically taking points from them. And he's had a couple of, you know, down moments, but at this point, like, just the way they're playing, they're making life pretty easy. I think it was ND Red Eagle on the site was posting about how they have like the highest expected save percentage in the league going into the game last night. So like another thing that Trotz is, last year the Islanders goalies, they had like grounds for a lawsuit against the coaching staff and the rest of the team because of how hard they made life on them. But this season, they're making life a lot easier on these guys. They're keeping chances to the outside for the most part, and you know, when they need a timely save, they get it, because you know, these one out of every 10 shots basically has been like a quality scoring chance for the other team. So hopefully, you know, let's just hope to God that he's all right. And like you said, it was precautionary.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing too, like when we're getting back to the stats debate. Yeah, I mean, the stats that are popular and you know, people look at, and again, they are important. I'm not trying to minimize how important they are. People have done, you know, studies on how leading the league in Corsi and Fenwick kind of translates to overall success over time. And I get all that. And that makes 100% sense. But like you said, there are other ways to win hockey games. And we also know that Trotz keeps his own stats. And I mean, for him, scoring chances are the big thing. And high danger scoring chances, I'm assuming, are the biggest thing. And, you know, we don't know if his high danger scoring chance correlates with everybody else's high danger scoring chance. But if they weren't doing what he wanted to do, he would definitely call them out. I mean, he said last night after that game that the first period against the Penguins was probably the worst period they played all season. So he's not immune to be, you know, seeing what's happening out there. So he would definitely call him out on it. But yeah, like you said, I mean, they're whatever it is that they're doing in that defensive zone is helping the goalies out a lot. And it's certainly way more than they got help with last year. I mean, I'm sure Yaro Halak, I mean, he's been fine in Boston, but I'm sure Yaro Halak is like, man, where was this when I was playing? You know, like that kind of thing. So that's the thing. And as long as they can keep making the coach happy and doing what he wants to do, I mean, it's hard to argue with his track record of success going back to his Nashville days.
And it's funny, I think people who don't watch every game and do look at stats, which I do for other teams, and you come up with these assumptions for how a team's playing. The Islanders have a really high shooting percentage because, like we were saying, they have had so many odd man rushes on the counterattacks. So like Valtteri Filppula might be shooting 62%, but it's because he's staring at an empty net every other shift.
Yeah, he's drawing him, goalie him, out and setting up an empty net for somebody else. So.
Right, exactly. Him and Andrew Ladd both have just banked in three goals this season combined.
Dude, like Matt Martin banked in a goal against the Flyers. It's crazy.
It's like the Islanders have had so many so many empty net chances. It's great. There's a manager in soccer in the Spanish league. His name's Diego Simeone, and he manages Atletico Madrid, and they're just known as this like defensive. You know, they play the best defensive soccer of basically our generation. And what they do is they have two talented strikers up front who are just clinical in finishing. They will always, if Atletico is coming down on a counterattack with numbers, they're going to end up scoring, and they get two or three of those a game. They're going to beat you 1-0. Right. And that's what the Islanders are kind of doing. They're like, well, we'll take our, 10 odd man rushes a game versus your 66, shots from the point, hoping that it banks in off somebody a game. And they're making that bet. And right now it's working, and it's going to work against, it's going to get them points against better teams. Like we were saying before. So I don't have enough good things to say about it.
Yeah. Butch Goring actually made the point last night, Butch also called Tom Kuhnhackl, and what was the other? He had another one too that was great. I just loved here. He must have said Kuhnhackl in like 15 times inside of a minute and a half. It was really funny. Anyway, but he made the point that the Penguins are almost trying to do too much, and it was sort of playing right into the Islanders' hands that they were, taking those little extra moves and turning them into turnovers and kind of going the other way. But it's been a lot of fun, and if they can, again, I don't think anybody expected them to be where they are right now after the first month of the season. And I think to call it anything other than wildly successful is kind of missing the forest through the trees here, And so we'll have to see where November takes us, which has historically been a pretty awful month, but hopefully Barry Trotz can exercise those demons too, starting Thursday night in Brooklyn against the very same Penguins, who are going to be pretty pissed off that they lost a pretty emotional game on Tuesday at home. So, however, let's talk about another sort of off ice thing. And again, hopefully we'll have to get an update on Leonard later on. But Tuesday saw another thing come up. I guess he was with the Sound Tigers because they were playing Hartford in the AHL, but Brett Sergalis had an article in the New York Post, an interview with Josh Hosang, who basically lamented what he believes is sort of a predetermined place on the Islanders' hierarchy. He kind of said that he felt that his role was already predetermined before training camp, and he hasn't really gotten a fair chance either in the NHL or in the AHL under Brent Thompson this year. He called Lamoriello a great man and said that, he's got nothing but love for the Islanders, all that kind of stuff. But it was obviously Josh griping about playing time and his role. He's not on the power play down there for Bridgeport, although he is getting the playing time. He just hasn't done a whole lot with it, according to our friend Alex Novet on Twitter. I think we both are in the same boat that we want Josh to play for the Islanders. We love, I have his t-shirt. Like, we want this guy to play. But he ain't doing himself any favors with this kind of stuff. And man, you can't say these, whether you agree or disagree with what he said, you can't say this stuff when you've got zero goals and four assists and the team is winning. The big club is winning. And you've got guys on your own team that have played really well this year. Michael Dacol, for example, has played really well this year. And the timing was off. You know, the message was not going to be well received by management for sure. And it's this kind of stuff that just sounds like less like a guy trying to muscle his way onto the big club than a guy who's kind of struggling maybe a little bit, kind of griping, as opposed to just keeping his head down and playing. I don't know. Am I an old man for thinking that, or is it just...
No. No, it is. And it's funny, too, that, you know, this is coming from the Post, too. It's just, it sounds like a very Postian thing to do.
Yeah,
like,
it's really weird.
why don't we go needle Josh Hosang for a couple quotes to like get some Islander fans to pay attention to us and our coverage. But it's a bad idea on his part. And I get like who he is and what he's trying to do with being honest with, like, we always get on players, like we were making fun of the accountability thing before for sticking to the script and in post game interviews and stuff like that. And he's obviously not doing that here, but at the same time, you know, this is kind of stuff that if you feel that way, and maybe he has, like, there are other people to tell besides Brett Sergalis, you know? This guy could basically do no wrong with the fan base. People love him. We love him. He's kind of a breath of fresh air type player. And now you're looking at it, he's kind of taking the wind out of that hype train a little bit, which, like I just said, would be hard for him to do, but he found a way to do it, which, you know, is kind of frustrating.
The timing is just all wrong.
Basically. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it also, like, dude, if you wanted to, do you not think that other teams are that article didn't go around to the 30 other teams in the NHL? Like, you know, just add this to the Josh Hosang portfolio in case we do want to take a risk on, you know, trading for him. So yeah, just a bad idea. You know, what's funny. It's not fair and direct, comparison to make, but it's because Rob Schrempf didn't do these kind of things with like the media, but he's starting his career is kind of starting to take a Schrempy and kind of turn. Like, oh, here's this guy with tons of talent, unbelievable hands, but the only place I can see him succeeding is over in Europe at this point, just because of his reputation here and the fact that he's not doing himself any favors. And, you know, the big ice will definitely suit him. So, you know, I don't think we'll be surprised in 6 or 7 years when Josh Hosang is leading the Swiss league in scoring for the Zurich line. Something like
that. I like that phrase, Schrempy intern. I like that. I'm surprised we never had a commenter with the, you know, the screen name Schrempy intern. But yeah. And, you know, and that's another thing, too, that's like a discrepancy between the way hockey people think and the way sort of we regular people think, particularly people on social media, is that, you know, immediately it's like, oh, well, you know, the Islanders are going to trade this guy and he's going to go on to be a big star for my team. Dude, your team is run by the same people that run my team. Like, there's very little difference. And I can guarantee that there's scouts in your room that are like, don't touch this guy with a 10-foot pole. Like, that's the way it is. And, you know, we're all afraid of that. We all saw it happen with Nino Niederreiter and, you know, his agent made some noise and then he got traded and he's turned into, you know, a very, very talented player. But I think that was a different situation. And I think, you know, Josh, the reason he's an Islander in the first place is because he had a reputation going in that might not have been totally deserved. And again, I'm not trying to, like, you know, say that these people are right. I want this guy to succeed and I want him as an Islander and I want him to give great interviews where he says stuff, you know, speaks his mind about subjects ranging from all types of different things. I want that. But he's got to be able to hold his own on the team in the NHL in order to do that. Like, you can't put the cart before the horse. You can't give a great interview and then not back it up with great play. Like, it doesn't work that way. And so, unfortunately for Josh, he's going to have to figure that out. And he's going to have to play to a level that makes the team stand up and take notice. And, you know, right now, Michael Dacol is doing that. And, you know, even if he did do that, I mean, Kiefer Bellows, somebody else brought this up in the comments too. Kiefer Bellows had more of a case to be made to stay with the team than Hosang did. And Bellows didn't get, he got sent down, and all he's done is, you know, played pretty well so far. So it's just, it's a real shame that we're gotten to this point. And anytime a player is drafted and, you know, he's still not a regular, like 3 or 4 years on, it's tough. And we talked about Michael Dal Colle earlier in the season. Like, I feel like this was the year that he was going to, you know, it was make or break for him. Like, he's either going to go or he's going to actually make himself into an NHL player. And he's done very well for himself so far in the first month of the AHL season. But the time starts ticking and you start to wonder. And we just, now is not the time for this kind of stuff, dude. Like, we can't have this, you know, while you're, well, the team is making different changes down there. It's always a struggle for Bridgeport. Like, we always want them to be good, but they never are. So we want them to be there too. And it's just not a good time for this right now. And, you know, it's a shame, but like you said, the tide is sort of turning. And I think people are kind of getting a little bit tired of this story. It's like reruns, you know, like we were on board in the beginning. Yes, we want the guy with this reputation. We want to make him an Islander. Screw everybody else. We want this guy. And now 3 years later, it's like, ugh, man, you know, like just play hockey, dude. Just play hockey, score goals, make stuff happen on the ice, and then we'll talk about screwing the other guys and being that kind of guy. You know? So.
Yeah, you put it right. I got nothing more to add. I hope he learns from it a little bit.
Well, I'm sure he got a phone call from Lou, and I'm sure Lou's open to Joshua. I'm just reading this. I love when Trotz calls Barzal Matthew. I assume that they always call the young guys by their full names. So it's Joshua, Matthew, that kind of thing.
That's kind of funny, actually. His post game stuff is great, Matthew. Matthew. Right. It's like the rest of the league calls him Matt Barzal or Barzal, and there he is, Matthew.
I like how Anders Lee is Leezy, but Matt Barzal is Matthew. I just find that fun. It's such an old man thing. And I guarantee they call Josh Joshua. I guarantee it.
I would assume so.
And if I knew his middle name, they'd probably use that too. Anyway. All right. So, sorry. What did you say?
I was going to say, is Robin Lehner, I was just thinking of their first names. Is he the first ever Robin to play for the Islanders? He's got it, right?
There haven't been a whole lot of Robins in the NHL as far as I know. Probably.
Right. Yeah.
There you go.
It just hit me that his name is Robin.
I mean, I can't even think of any other NHL Robins, but I'm pretty sure Matthew Barzal is the first one team Matthew to play for the Islanders or play anywhere for that matter. Okay, so what else? Like I said, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves because it is only 9:06 a.m., so there's a whole day for stuff to happen. But it's been pretty much a wild week. I don't think anybody expected it. So they got Thursday night against the Penguins at home. They have, I think they're, what is it, Saturday against the Devils. Then Monday against the Canadiens, who always beat the Islanders. And then, Thursday, they're in Tampa. So another rough stretch of games. But, you know, I think anything is really possible.
I'm not scared anymore.
Yeah. You know?
It's funny. Like, you know, like I'm just thinking, I'm like, yeah, we can beat them. We can beat them. We can definitely beat them. I'm not scared. I was looking at the schedule before, while my power was out, just trying to like get in as much pre-pod prep as I could. And, I saw that Tampa game and I just started laughing because I knew, like, you know, if this was any other week, we'd just be like, oh, crap. They're gonna go 0-4 and get their doors blown off just to put the cherry on top by the Lightning. But no, I'm not too worried.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got and if even
I'm
if
looking
they,
forward to it. Yeah. That's what I.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. but you know, even if they do lose, I the thing is, like, I expect there to be an explanation as to why they lost, and you know, we'll be able to look at it and be like, hey, they didn't do this, or they did this too much, or they didn't do this enough, and we would be able to explain it. Because I think what's happening is that they're building a case for themselves. I mean, Trotz said it last night too after the game against the Penguins. You know, they're forging an identity, which again, the fifth most overused phrase in sports, but it's they're forging a way that they play and a way that they're going to be known for playing. And so if they go in there and play that way, hey, maybe it works. I mean, Trotz has played the Lightning a million times in his career, so they'll be able to figure it out. So, but yeah, I'm not scared. I think that they'll have a chance to win the game and see what happens. And if not, then Trotz is going to figure out what happened and how to fix it. You know, they definitely do need to fix that first period problem because it seems to be a consistent issue. But I think they will. I think they'll get around to it eventually and get it fixed. But I don't want to look too far ahead because, again, the Devils have always been a tough out for the Islanders. And the Canadiens, I don't even want to get – I just hate playing the Canadiens so much. They're just the worst. And I'm sure they're going to come down. The whole contingent's going to come down and be like, what is going on down here? How you won this many games? How you do that? You know, because they probably have totally ignored the Islanders since about July 2nd. So that'll be
You know what? One other kind of thing that was funny about that game last night was – or in the broadcast. During the broadcast, Butch Goring brought up that Mike Sullivan and Barry Trotz obviously had coached against each other. I don't know if it was Butch or Brendan. It was probably Brendan. In 3 years in a row, and they've seen each other a lot over the years, obviously, with the Penguins and Capitals. And the winner of that series had gone on to win the Stanley Cup. But just the fact that, you know, like going into this season, before this season, when the Islanders would come to town, like the other coach, I wonder if they would be like, you know, if Ken Hitchcock or Mike Sullivan or Claude Julien would just be like, oh, the Jack Capuano, like, I don't even, is that a real person? Why is Doug Weight coaching the Islanders? Like, yeah. What connection is there that he ended up with the Islanders? But like now it's Barry Trotz is coming to town. It's like, I can just see the coaches afterwards, just like giving each other a nod or like getting a beer after the game. And it's like, it's just a newfound respect level that I have. And I also want to bring up the assistant coaches, like even Scott Gomez, like I feel like when even going back to Ted Nolan, when he had Dan LaCroix and Danny Flynn and they look more menacing on the bench than they ever have. Like last year, like they Ray Cronin looked menacing in a different way. And like, if you don't give up your body to block a shot, even down 5-1, like I'm going to kill you kind of way. This is like more of a, they're like walking around, they look like Secret Service. I find myself just staring at the bench. Part of it is because I still haven't computed that Trotz is the coach. Like my mind is still getting used to that idea. But the other part is like, I'm just fascinated to watch these guys on the bench. They look like they're doing stuff with purpose after everything.
Right.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Trotz has that kind of steely eyed look behind the bench. He's always looking. And it's a totally different thing. And I'm just used to the Islanders, especially under Capuano and under Weight. You know, and under Scott Gordon for that matter too, is, you know, I have no actual data to back this up, and I'm sure everybody would deny it exists. But for referees dealing with the rookie coach, there's kind of that learning curve. Like, you don't get the respect as a rookie coach that a veteran coach would get from the referees, and you know, maybe your explanations or penalties aren't quite as crisp, or maybe you don't get those penalties in the first place, that kind of thing. And the Islanders have gone through that for so long. I feel like Jack Capuano was the coach for 6 years before the referees like gave him his due, you know. And I'm sure that didn't happen that way. And Doug Weight obviously only had the 1 year and a half as a coach. But with Trotz, you don't get that. You can see when he talks to the refs, he asks them, he gets an answer, he goes, okay, and then he moves on, or he gives him a stern look like, what are you doing? And the ref says something, he's like, well, F off, you know, like that kind of thing, and that's about it. But that's the kind of respect level that happens when this guy has been in the league for 100 years. And yeah, it definitely feels different. And you know, I know we've said that before, and there are going to be games that feel the same. And they you know, again, that Panthers, we're a week away from a game against the Panthers that felt like the same old Islanders game we've seen 100 times. But then in a row, three games in a row were different Islanders games. And so, you know, I think that's a pattern that you kind of look for going forward in the season. There's going to be games where you're just like, oh man, this sucks, I've seen this before. But then they might follow it up with a game that, again, 5 years ago they would have lost, or last year they would have lost, or they've never done this, or that kind of thing. So I mean, if that's the pattern they can keep going with, you know, 3 and then 1 that just stinks, hey, I'll take it, you know. And
yeah,
we'll see where they end up.
And if they keep like the way the Metro is like has shaped up in the early going, it's with the Blue Jackets, or Bobrovsky's been bad, and the Flyers have been bad. The Rangers obviously are struggling. And then, you know, the Capitals, Penguins, Islanders and Hurricanes are kind of all within earshot of each other. So if they can just kind of hang with whatever, I think the division will end up splitting into two with the Rangers and what looked like the Islanders to going into the year and the Flyers maybe going towards like sinking towards the bottom. If the Islanders can just stay within reach of that kind of mid to top group in the division, they're look out because they like these guys are going to make a jump. They're going to get better too. That's the other thing too is like Trotz has only had a month to work with this team. We're already seeing the results kind of pay off, and maybe we are getting too ahead of ourselves. But you know, he's going to get better over time when he does get you figure out what the forged identity looks like. Sounds like a hockey reality show.
Forged identity.
Yeah. Tune in to see what kind of team the Minnesota Wild are going to be this year.
Forged identity. A Shrimpian hockey tale only on NHL Network. Yeah, no, there you go. I think that about covers it. Yeah, so we'll see. Month two of the I guess training camp is technically month one. Then this is month two, so now we're going to get into month three.
Let's call training camp month zero.
All right, there you go. So month zero, month one, and now we're going to get into month two of the Trotz experience, and we'll see where it takes us. All right, very good. Thank you very much for listening. Mike, can you tell everybody your Twitter handle again?
Sure, it's the Big Lebowski with two E's.
The Big Lebowski with two E's. Be sure to read. Be sure to follow Mike there. Yesterday, he, as he said accurately, Tom Kuhn-Heckel islandered the Penguins. So there you go. be sure to read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up to date Islanders news and discussion. Please have a happy and safe Halloween. I think we've both had some eerie things happen to us this morning. Your power went out in your building, which delayed us a little bit. My wife and I today, we were making eggs, and we had three separate double yolks in the same dozen eggs, which is a very, very weird occurrence. I think Zool might be living in my refrigerator right now. We'll see.
Wow. That's
very odd. Yeah, I had
I don't know if I've ever had a double yolk before.
Wow. Really? You guys shop at our supermarket, Acme. but I've had one. I haven't had one in a long, long time. I had one this morning, and then she had two. That's pretty wild. Anyway, so Halloween is afoot. Enjoy your trick-or-treating. Enjoy your candy. Be safe, and we will talk to you next week. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. I'm